broadcasting on the Drug Truth Network, this is Cultural Baggage.
It's not only inhumane, it is really fundamentally un-American.
My name is Dean Becker. I don't condone or encourage the use of any drugs, legal or illegal. I report the unvarnished truth about the pharmaceutical, banking, prison, and judicial nightmare that feeds on eternal drug war. Neocons are milking the good and decent members of the Republican Party with promises they'll never keep and lies they'll never have to pay for.
I'm a war president. I make decisions here in the Oval Office in foreign policy matters with war on my mind. Saddam Hussein was dangerous with weapons. Saddam Hussein was dangerous with the ability to make weapons. He was a dangerous man in the dangerous part of the world. I believe it is essential that when we see a threat, we deal with those threats before they become imminent. It's too late if they become imminent. It's too late in this new kind of war, and so that's why I made the decision I made. I want to lead us. I want to lead this world toward more peace and freedom.
Welcome to this edition of Cultural Baggage. We do intend to have Terry Jones as our guest. He's the author of War on the War on Terror. We're having a little trouble reaching him at this point in time, and we're going to talk to the newly installed president of the Drug Policy Forum of Texas, Mr. Carl Vaily, about deception in the drug war. I understand we do have Carl online.
Yes.
Hello, Carl. How are you, sir?
Hello, Dean. I'm fine. And you?
I'm well. Yes, sir. This coincides quite well with Mr. Jones' book, The War on the War on Terror, because it's always been my contention that the war of terror, mind you, is the war on drugs with afterburners, because certainly it's a war of terror on both sides.
Well, I think they're all really part of the same thing. I'd like to kind of derive my viewpoints on that, if you don't mind.
No, sir. That's why you're here. Please go ahead.
All right. If you look at the most basic element of the drug war, it's like it's a bit of commerce, like any other commerce. We have a buyer and a seller, and if both the buyer and the seller are happy with their transaction, they're not about to invite anybody else in to break it up. And so if some third party, the government or whoever, decides that they don't want this transaction to take place for whatever reason, they must rely on deceit. That is, they must have some sort of a spy or an informant, or they must be eavesdropping or some form of deceit to get into this transaction where they're not invited. Now, everybody has been taught since they were tiny children that deceit is bad, with the exception of when the deceived party really has it coming. And so if we are to believe that they really have it coming, we have to believe that those parties being deceived are very bad people. That means demonization. And prohibition is simply not possible without it. So prohibition, which the war on drugs is a form of institutionalized deceit. And when we institutionalize deceit, we introduce all sorts of other things. For example, the easiest targets to demonize are those that we can spot on appearance. And what does that mean? That means instantly we have to demonize based on racism. And the drug war, as you are well aware, is basically racist. It's very strong racist overtones at very best.
Our good friend Cliff Thornton brought forward a point just recently that in the U.S., we now have more than 1 million black people behind bars, more people than there were slaves during the Civil War.
I've met Cliff, and he's a very, very intelligent guy, and he's exactly right on that. It's a very subtle form of demonization, which is really an extension of the same thing. In many ways, I think it's more insidious than the out-and-out segregation, and it's at least as damaging, and partly because of its more hidden qualities or its being less obvious. But when we demonize, of course, this means that we have to We have to do things like approve of violence as well. And I think the increase in violence in our country has gone parallel to the growth in the demonization industry that's otherwise called prohibition. I think it extends to all national policy, this habit of demonizing, this habit of okaying violence or action against the bad guys. And bad, in that general concept, begins to apply to poor people or other or dissenting political views or any serious differences in opinion. Can instantly be related to bad guys. And we've been kind of callous to accepting violence and deceit against bad guys. And so all we have to do is broaden the definition of bad guy a little bit, and we've already built in our mechanism of demonization, our mechanism brought on by prohibition.
Well, Carl, let's talk about that. It is the policy of prohibition that tends to increase the violence, as you say, and that tends to bring about easier access to drugs for our children. Increases the purity, increases the likelihood that people will get involved for the lucrative marketplace.
I would like to hear anybody bring up an aspect of drug abuse that is not worsened by prohibition. Prohibition is absolutely the worst possible of all policies, and which is not to say I'm in favor of drug abuse. Of course I'm not. But prohibition of alcohol didn't cure alcoholism either. I think this deceit, though, causes problems in all aspects of society because it requires secrecy. And as we read in the paper just the other day, this administration has declared more things secret than all the previous administrations by some factor. I forget all the numbers, but this administration has a bigger need for secrecy than any that we've had in my lifetime. And I'm pretty old.
Well, it certainly goes back to the time of the energy policy being crafted, and they still don't want to announce who was at the meetings or what was said.
Well, yeah. Secrecy, gee, isn't that one of the first elements of tyranny? We have an obsessive belief in something, and secrecy and a need for power, a rule by force, or compelling, and all of those things are absolutely essential elements of the policy of prohibition. If you want to think about it a little bit, we have prohibition of lots of things. We are basically prohibiting teen pregnancy, for example. And we can see how well that works.
Well, true enough. The policy of using, I hear numbers ranging from $50 to $80 billion a year to fight this drug war. Over the decades, that amounts to some hundreds of millions of dollars that could have been redirected towards education, health, and insurance, perhaps.
Oh.
That instead has been squandered because we have not improved this situation.
We've steadily made it worse, and I think that's sort of an inescapable law somehow, a law of nature, that when you're trying to attack the consequences directly without attacking the causes, you will invariably make things worse.
Well, you know, Carl, as I understand it, there is some sparks of hope. Some inclinations that we're going to make some changes. The good folks up in King County in Seattle, Washington State,
yes.
have come out with a...
The Bar Association up there has done some wonderful things.
Yes, and they have built a coalition involving the Psychiatric Association, the Health Association, the League of Women Voters,
mm-hmm.
and on down, a group of ministers, on down the line, and all of these people are calling for their state to take the control of these drugs away from the criminals and put it in the hands of state regulation. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, Dean, you know, I really believe that the prohibition is such a shallow approach, is such a bad idea, that anybody that stops to think about it will conclude the same. But resistance to stopping to think about it, in my opinion, is the definition of a single word. And that is, I think, to many, many people, the word legalize automatically means condone and means to approve of. And I think the arguments tend to stop, minds tend to switch off when you use a word like legalize, because they say, oh, here's somebody who is pro-drug abuse. And that's simply not the case. So I think as a few cracks in that reflexive mental armor, you might say, begin to develop, I think we're going to see more and more people stopping to think. And when they do, they'll realize that, wait a minute, legalize means to regulate, not to unregulate. And I think we need to be pushing for greater regulation. And the only way you can regulate something is to legalize it. You cannot regulate that which is simply banned. Then the market forces regulate it, not the law. And so currently the drug prices are being set by the profit motives of criminals and the law of supply and demand. So it's a very strange situation, exactly the opposite of what the drug warriors are hoping for.
Now, as I understand it, up in Canada, they had the murder of four Royal Canadian Mounted Police a couple of weeks back now.
Yeah.
And there's been so much discussion that, oh my gosh, we couldn't allow these drugs to be regulated because we don't want a worse situation. We don't want these drugs available to everybody. But that's ludicrous, is it not?
Well, along that line, my favorite quotation is from Noam Chomsky, who says, blaming crimes like that on the effect of drugs is a little bit like saying, is a whole lot like saying that Al Capone ordered the St. Valentine's Day massacre because he was drunk. And, you know, the effect or the influence of marijuana does not cause this violence. It's the profit motive of the criminals, or it's the fear of being captured, and it's the fear of being unjustly punished, and yada, yada, yada. It is not the effect of the drug itself. It's the effect of prohibition that causes all the violence and causes all the problems.
Well, Carl, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
Come on, you little kid. Say, hey, Daddy, President Bush tried marijuana. I think I will.
When it all goes to hell, eternal wars start to smell. Just dial 911. Cut the taxes on the rich, and if the people start to bitch, yell 911. If you smoked a lot of reefer and your buddy tells the people, whisper 911. If extraordinary rendition leaves innocence in warped conditions, quick, dial 911. If you've really effed it up and need more money in your cup, punch 911.
If you believe the drug war is a sham, help tear down the wall of fear. Share cultural baggage with grandma and dad. CDs available at drugtruth.net.
Okay, you are listening to Cultural Baggage. My name is Dean Becker. Our guest is Carl Vaily, the president of the Drug Policy Forum of Texas. Carl, I want to ask you, there is a solution. There is a change on the horizon, is there not? Is there not change afoot?
I think there is. I think it's moving slowly. And, you know, Dean, in my opinion, that the reason it's moving slowly is because the drugs themselves are nowhere near the problem that alcohol was, for example. And this is not to make light of either problem. But I think it's moving slowly because we really don't have a problem that's directly related to drug use. We have huge problems related to prohibition. And people, as people begin to see that distinction, I think it is changing. In the past several years, I've seen a significant difference in attitude. And I just gave a talk at a Rotary Club, for example, where, oddly enough, people actually listened. There were a few who didn't, but a few years back, it would have been tar and feather time. And for simply suggesting that we should consider thinking about ending drug prohibition. But at least I was quite gratified that there was a lot of head nodding going on. A couple of whiplash injuries, I think, from people agreeing so vigorously.
Well, and as I hear it, the members of law enforcement against prohibition give a lot of speeches, and I hear from their members that, again, 80 and 90% sometimes come up to them and support what they've said.
I have no doubt about that at all. I think there has been a long road, but I think there has been a big change in public attitude. And as you know, politicians always lag behind public opinion. They never lead public opinion; they lag behind it. And I think that's we're finally reaching the point where somebody will finally have the courage to actually campaign on the point of repealing drug prohibition or offering an alternative to prohibition, and will win. I think the first one that does that will win handily, and that will be the tipping point nationally. I think we're reaching that point.
I would agree. There again, I try on a daily, well, at least on a weekly basis, to contact people in power, people that are running this drug war, and I meet nothing but unwillingness. They will not come on this show to discuss the subject at all.
Well, no, we've had that that problem for a long, long time, and I know in past occasions I've been involved and tangentially involved in people in contacting politicians who will say, well, yes, I agree with you, but boy, would it be cutting my political throat to come out and say so in public.
Right.
And I think they're we're getting closer and closer to the time when somebody will actually put a crack in the ice there, and when they do, the whole thing is going to just cascade in our favor.
Well, Carl, I realize that the drug policy forum of Texas is one of the original statewide, if you will, successful drug reform organizations. And if you will, tell folks where they might learn more about your organization on the net.
Best place is go to dpft.com.
Is that not .org?
I'm sorry, .org. I was looking at something else here, sorry.
Drug Policy Forum of Texas, dpft.org. A lot of good information, a lot of good writings by many of the members who have put many years into understanding this problem.
Many good links there, too, in the places to other organizations, other state organizations, national and even international organizations. So there's a lot of people out there putting a lot of effort into making people stop and think. And if they ever really stop and think, they've got to be opposed to drug prohibition because it does not work.
Absolutely right, my friend. I appreciate you being with us. We have been speaking with Carl Vailey, the president of the Drug Policy Forum of Texas. Thank you, Carl.
Okay, good night.
Good night, sir. All right, Steve, let's see if they can name that drug.
It's time to play Name That Drug by its side effects. Nausea, chills, tremors, dizziness, neck pain, headache, panic disorders, mood swings, violent outrage, decreased sex drive, inability to achieve climax, suicide. Time's up. The answer, Lexapro. Approved by the FDA for depression.
A couple of program notes I wanted to bring forward. We will have as our guest next week Mr. K. He's the Drug Truth Network reporter who got out of prison a couple of weeks back. He was to have been our guest tonight, but he will be joining us next week. He's the man who spent 14 months in a Texas prison for having a millionth of a gram of marijuana in his urine. And we'll also be joined by Randy White. He's a member of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. He has worked as a prison guard, as a dog handler, and as a sniper for a SWAT team. And we'll be talking with them about that. We do have time for a couple of our reports from the Drug Truth Network. Steve, let's go ahead.
Can marijuana make you crazy? That's the question people are asking after reading media reports about a study purporting to show a link between marijuana use and psychosis. In reality, there's less here than meets the eye. First, the research relied on responses to a psychological screen consisting of 10 items drawn from a longer symptom checklist, not actual diagnoses. Second, research has shown that this particular screen is not terribly reliable, particularly for measuring psychotic symptoms. Third, the numbers were unimpressive. Non-users averaged 0.64 symptoms. At worst, daily users reportedly averaged 1.95 symptoms. Fourth, the number of symptoms increased over time only for the daily users. All other user groups showed a decline between ages 18 and 25. Finally, three of the symptoms were paranoia, the feeling that most people can't be trusted, the feeling one's being watched or talked about, and having ideas or beliefs others don't share. Many perfectly sane marijuana users might agree with at least one or two of those. One day marijuana will be legal. We need to know what the real effects are. Poor quality research like this only muddies the meme pool. For the Drug Truth Network, this has been Doug McVeigh, editor of DrugWarFacts.org.
For more than 90 years, we have fought in the U.S. an ever-escalating battle against terrorists, mostly men of color who were said to possess weapons, chemical weapons, deemed a threat to the continuance of our nation. The chemical weapons? Drugs, not manufactured by the Fortune 500.
A new UN report ranks U.S.-occupied Afghanistan 173 out of 178 countries surveyed in terms of human development. One in 15 Afghan women die during childbirth. One in 5 Afghan children die before their 5th birthday. Afghanistan is the world's leader in infant deaths caused by contaminated water. In Washington, House Republicans are proposing a cut of $570 million from the $2 billion requested by the White House for Afghan reconstruction. Funding for Afghan anti-narcotics initiatives is also being scaled back, even though U.S.-occupied Afghanistan now produces about 87% of the world's opium, poppy cultivation tripling in the last year alone. The Bush administration is now moving to cancel all U.S. funding for international HIV/AIDS prevention programs, which provide for harm reduction measures such as access to sterile syringes, despite the fact that the fastest-growing regional HIV epidemics worldwide are being driven by injection drug use. This is Glenn Greenway reporting for the Drug Truth Network.
The Food and Drug Administration is a quasi-corporate joke. The DEA is a certifiable threat to our nation. Health and Human Services mimics the Lion from Oz. Congress, too, is full of cowards. The president is a walking billboard for success after drug use. And the Controlled Substances Act is a screed for the new Inquisition.
The Columbia Police Officers Association in Missouri is trying to ensure its paycheck. They are collecting signatures to try and repeal the city's new marijuana ordinance. This ordinance reduces the penalty for possession of an ounce and a quarter of marijuana to a ticket and up to a $250 fine. As an example of why it needs to be repealed is the incident involving the death of Officer Molly Bowden and the wounding of Officer Curtis Brown by a gunman with a record of misdemeanor marijuana possession. They should be hoping this new law would prevent the tragedy from happening again because someone won't fear being sent up the river for possession of a bag of marijuana. But instead, they're going to present the signatures they collected to city council, and if that doesn't work, they say they will try to put it on the ballot. When I first started questioning the drug war, the police would say they were only following orders when the drug war was brought into question. Now, when the people have ordered a change in policy, they are raising Cain. It just goes to show you that marijuana prohibition is the cash cow that feeds the drug war. According to the recently released report by Normal, a marijuana arrest costs approximately $10,400. That would be over $7 billion a year in the United States, with a lot of that being the paycheck for the police to bust the kids with a baggie. Like they always say, follow the money. This is Steve Nolan for the Drug Truth Network.
Those in ancillary positions of authority, the working man of the drug war, make sure their mortgage payments are met and their retirement assured by joining in the feast of the drug war. Their meat is spewing tales of dread and woe, knowing full well their lies will pay their bills and the agony that spirals from their intervention will be disguised to support their contentions regarding the harms of drugs.
The following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
It is impossible not to notice the growing movement to legalize medical marijuana. Drug legalization advocates would have you believe that marijuana can be helpful in reducing pain and nausea associated with chemotherapy, citing countless instances where it indeed has been effective. Because this issue is so important, here is the United States drug czar John Walters to refute these claims.
There are people who sincerely believe that they know or have been sick, they have been suffering, they've taken marijuana, they felt better. I don't deny that. But the issue is about efficacious medicine and what's really going on here. If they'd have taken a hit of crack, they'd felt better. If they'd taken a shot of heroin, they'd felt better. It's not about feeling better. It's about what is ethical and efficacious medical practice. What's really going on here is, in too many states where this is being discussed, is sick and dying people are being used as a political prop for legalized marijuana. And those of us entrusted with responsibility to be honest about what is and is not scientifically efficacious in medicine and other places have a responsibility to stand up and say this is a lie.
Thank you, Mr. Walters, for clearing that up for everybody. I'm Winston Francis. This has been the official government truth.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed those reports. They should make you wonder about why you're not doing anything to change this madness. There is not one in government, corporate planning, out walking the beat, or testifying in court who deserves a moment's grace. They are all aware, full knowing, and guilty as hell. It is our job to drive these gross and evil sinners down to the river of reform for baptism. It is our job to sing hallelujah to the end of drug war, to preach, reach, teach, and if necessary, to impeach these sons of Satan. I've tried so many times to find one drug warrior brave enough, intelligent, or stupid enough to defend their policy of eternal drug war on the radio in any fashion whatsoever, and it's been to absolutely no avail. They hide their sins behind feigned ignorance, pseudo-superstition, or simple bully pulpit bluster. For too long, their attitude, their out-of-control policy, in and of itself, has barred the discussion, which will force us to repeal these unconstitutional laws. The drug war is over when we cease our infantile acceptance of pronouncements from false saviors whose true desire is to forever govern our minds, our bodies, and our very lives. When push comes to shove, these drug warriors dare not take the battlefield. Truth frightens them much more than Goliath frightened young David. There's absolutely nothing to fear except acceptance of eternal defeat. And that's the real bread and butter of the drug warriors. The drug lords run both sides of this equation, and I urge you to please do something to help end this situation. If you'd ever like to send me an email with a story idea or comments or whatever, my email is dean@drugtruth.net. You know, every day I write and report in numerous ways that the emperor has no clothes, and I implore you and I cajole and I constantly yell fire in this burning building of the drug war, and yet most of you haven't done anything yet. And this drug war is a madness that's overtaken our country, that wastes vast resources that we should and need to be using elsewhere. And I urge you to take part in making the change. I urge you to contact your congressman, to phone them, to email them, to write them, to get involved in the process, because in order to be a good citizen, it involves more than just talking over the fence or the water cooler. And as always, my friends, because of drug prohibition, I remind you, you don't know what's in that bag. Please be careful.
For the Drug Truth Network and our affiliates in the U.S. and Canada, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. This show is produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston. Tap dancing on the edge of cannabis.